wherever you listen throughout the world. It's football time.
We're back for another episode of the Gridiron Guys, your home of all things NFL south of the equator. This week, we are previewing the AFC East, the one, the only. Joining me, as always, is Cam. How are we going?
Good, thanks, Zach. How are you?
Good as always. All right, as I said, this week is our AFC East preview, so that means all things Bills, Dolphins, Patriots, Jets. But I think before we get into that, I think we got a bit of housekeeping going on, don't we, regarding some of the things we brought up in our last episode.
Yeah, I think we talked about that. Obviously, our big topic last week was NBA versus NFL championship. What's harder to win? And we asked people for a bit of feedback. We did get a bit of feedback from a couple of listeners. So got something back from one Guy Richardson. Thanks for listening along, Guy. He just said, I think one thing that wasn't brought up in the debate was the salary cap. NBA runs a soft cap, meaning they can go over it and then pay a luxury tax on it. Hence why super teams are formed so often and everyone often wonders how they can afford them. He said, Harden, Durant, Irving example. NFL has a hard cap, so you can't go over it all. Something I've observed being an Indy fan. So Pacers and Colts is a soft cap, makes it so much harder for small market teams like the Pacers to win when no one wants to sign there, but makes it easier for larger market teams like New York and LA teams to win. Hard cap evens out the whole comp in the NFL, so everyone's on a more even playing field salary cap-wise. I think he makes a very good point there. I think on those smaller teams with the soft salary cap, you can just spend those big dollars to try and win a championship now rather than, the hard cap. If you go over, obviously you can't go over, so it's harder to sign those bigger players. What do you reckon?
Yeah, correct. I think we probably talked a lot about LeBron, and I suppose he is one of those sort of polarizing players, and we did forget to sort of mention, those sort of players like Durant, who's been able to move across. He went from OKC to the Warriors and now to the Nets, and he's pretty much wherever he goes. Granted, he's providing quite quality minutes and points and all that sort of thing, but he's been able to go to the places that are pretty much championship ready. They're basically there to win a ring straight away almost.
Yeah, 100%. He's just not going to go to a bad team, is he, and try and be just that one guy?
No, not really. And as you said, these bigger markets are able to be there. So it's not like he has to go somewhere to be the number one guy just to sort of pad for his, retirement fund, essentially.
Oh, 100%. I think looking at other messages we have, we just had a couple others, and they're just saying, kind of reiterated what we said throughout the episode is you've got seven games compared to one. It's make or break. So I think they kind of proved our point there. We put out a little poll and some of the people sort of gave their points, said who they liked, NFL or NBA. And I think it was about 85% thought NFL was harder. I know we've probably got a more bias based on who we follow, but that's okay.
No, we love that. But so that was good. It was always good to see people come through. Another thing that I did see come across my desk, I know we talked about Tim Tebow a couple of weeks ago, but oh my God, have you seen the vision of him lately?
Oh, he's massive. He looks enormous. He has not missed a session in the gym at all.
I think it's ridiculous. He has been lifting more than just Bibles recently. It is, this is probably going to be bigger than the second coming of Jesus. Jesus may be coming inside of him right now as we speak.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's actually, I'm liking more and more the bet that we talked about earlier, the other week about one or more touchdowns. So I think that could be possible.
Oh, unless he just stands there and blocks, which he may just do looking at him.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true.
We all at one point or another have played for a coach as a jerk.
All right. Shall we get into it?
Let's get into it. I think for starters, we might want to recap the 2020 season that was for the AFC East. So just rattling off the standings, finishing up Bills 13-3, Dolphins were 10-6, the Patriots 7-9, Jets 2-14 to round out the bottom there. Interestingly enough, it was the first time since 2008 that Pats had not won the division, which they currently won. They're on an 11 straight, AFC East crowns, and they'd won 17 of the last 19 titles.
Pretty much due to one guy, isn't it?
Pretty much. Look, and those two titles that they did lose, they lost on tie breaks, so they actually didn't lose to anyone.
Yeah, okay. So they've just had it's been almost two decades of domination from the Patriots, and it's kind of good to see that they weren't the top team for once.
Well, exactly. It was Bill's first division win since 1995, so Bill's Mafia were back in force.
Oh, I love seeing that for their fan base. Their fan base is so passionate, and it's just brilliant.
Yeah, it's good. And it has been tough for them in the playoffs. Whether they make it was four Super Bowls in a row, and they couldn't even win one. So it was nice to see them have a little bit of success. They did make it to the conference championship, But they were undone by the Chiefs, who they did lose to twice in the end. But their defense throughout the year was quite good. You know, they won a lot of games. They kept it close. They were only really blown off the park once by the Titans, and that was due to more sort of, you know, Allen throwing a couple interceptions, and I think there might have been some fumbles and some forces. But their defense kept, you know, Derrick Henry, who was probably one of the most prolific rushers of the year. It's only 57 yards.
Yeah, that's very handy for their defense to hold him to that. I know not many teams were able to sort of keep him in check. Yeah, their playoff run was pretty decent. I mean, what they beat the Colts in wild card, beat the Ravens, and I mean, we didn't play that well, but they played a pretty good game. And yeah, that game against the Chiefs, I think that's probably something we're going to see for the next 5 to 10 years. They're probably going to be the two teams sitting at the top of the AFC for a while.
Yeah, absolutely. That's for sure. And then as we talk about, I think the next on the rate was sort of the Dolphins. They basically sort of look like they struggled for consistency throughout the year. You know, they did end up with a 10-6 record, as I said, but you sort of just felt that they were never really in that conversation, even though they were only one win away from the wild card. And it was sort of more because there was that sort of polarizing view of where they were juggling the two quarterbacks, their Ryan Fitzpatrick and Tua.
Yeah, I actually didn't. Looking at their record, I don't actually remember them being that decent. Like 10-6 isn't a horrible record, and it doesn't really seem like they're a team talked about other than, yeah, as you say, Tua. But they went all right because I think they were under a new coach, weren't they? Isn't Brian Flores?
Yes.
Yeah, so they could be interesting this year, but see how they go.
No, well, that's it. And I think, again, I feel like sometimes when teams have sort of got that quarterback carousel and they're trying to chop and change, it gets you no consistency. And I understand if a player's not doing well or something like that, you do need to make a change. But quarterback is one of those positions where if there isn't that consistency, you know, they're not training. They don't know who's training with the first team each week. They're, you know, the other guy's playing with the scout offense and things like that. It can really just disrupt the flow, I think, for myself.
Oh, 100%. I think with Tua, his rookie year, probably was, as you said, a bit disrupted. He didn't get a groove, didn't get in the flow. I know he had a massive hip injury, so it could be a reason why they didn't play him as much, didn't want, like, kind of worried about him getting hurt. And Fitzpatrick played pretty well in a lot of games. Like, he's still a guy that just consistently delivers.
Yeah, absolutely. Then moving on to the Patriots, as we said, probably an off year for them, likely because they lost their star man in Tom Brady. And I think probably one of the biggest things also as well, they had multiple of their starting players sitting out due to COVID.
Yeah, that was probably a big one for me. I think, well, there was a number of their, like, quality defensive players just sat out, and that just really hurt them.
Yeah, it was absolutely. And I think you sort of saw as well, the combination of Bill Belichick and Cam Newton sort of seemed to work every now and again. You know, they're obviously different type of styles of players and coaching and things like that. You know, Bill likes his systems, and then Cam Newton is more sort of that running, flashy play type thing. So it was quite different for Bill, I suppose. But they did come along. They won a fair few games, but they're just fairly inconsistent for my liking. Like, you know, I was looking at their record and who their win loss. You know, they dominated the Chargers 45-0 in December and then went on a 3-game losing streak. Like, you just can't build a season on that if you're going to go out and dominate someone like the Chargers, who were actually half decent last year as well. Credit to them.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. I think, yeah, you're saying they beat the Chargers. I know they did beat the Ravens in that shitty, rainy game, but there's games there that they could have launched off from and sort of made a bit of a run. But as you said, they sort of broke it into 3 losses in a row. Mm. They're just not the Patriots that we're used to, and that's fair enough with the personnel and no Tom.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think finally we pull up to the laughing stock of the division. That's probably a bit mean, but, you know, the Jets, they stunk. They even stunk so much they couldn't get the number one pick.
Yeah, they really butchered that. Kind of the perennial whipping boys for the last few years, haven't they?
Absolutely, yeah. And I think it definitely didn't help with all the controversy surrounding Gaze throughout the year. You know, he relieved himself of the offensive play calling after their 0-13 start. And then they famously blitzed against the Raiders, which lost them the game on the last play win.
Just left a wide receiver just open.
Oh, gosh, I know. And it all went tits up, really. Gaze was fired by the end of the year, and, you know, Darnold ended up getting shipped out and almost blamed for half of it as well. So now it feels like they're sort of starting again with the number two pick, getting a new QB and new head coach, new system. So
yeah, for an interesting division next year. I think we're obviously going to talk further about this, but the team's on the rise. I don't know whether they're going to be yet, but I guess we'll get into that in the next little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, but as you said, it sort of feels like this will be sort of like a Bills sort of division now for the next little while.
End around. John Brown is going to look to pass. Looking for Allen. He's got it. Touchdown, Bills, on a trick play to start things.
All right, let's head into the teams. We'll have a little breakdown of what we think is going to happen this year for each team. And I think we're going to start with the Bills. So for you, Cam, what did you have the Bills coming out their record this year?
I've got a pretty dominant record for them. I know we both went through the record, and it's kind of hard to do it this time of year because you look at the good teams and you look at the bad teams, like, how are they going to win these games? But it's the NFL. Good yep. teams lose, bad teams beat decent teams. I ended up with a 15-2 record for the Bills. How about yourself?
I saw them winning 14-3 losses, but to sort of come through, I think in my overall record, they came about third or fourth in the AFC. Just sort of lent towards some of those bigger games. I think I probably lent towards, you know, the home team and giving the balance to the home team and when I was doing my record. So that's probably where I saw a couple of them coming undone on those bigger away trips.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, it was hard to see them losing some games, but I guess, yeah, as we see that the seasonal playout injuries kind of play a factor in just different changes. I think looking at the team breakdown, quarterback, obviously we know Josh Allen's going to be their quarterback for the next 5, 10, 15 years. We don't know how long he'll be around, but he's just fast rising. He's probably one of the best in the AFC and now the NFL. He's massive arm, 6'6". And can run. Like, he actually scored a lot of rushing touchdowns. So I don't mind. Like, the quarterback situation is pretty good.
Yeah, no, he was electric last year. It was easily his career best year. He was also in the MVP conversation. We can't forget that, really. He threw over 4,500 yards at a 69.2% completion rate, which with 37 touchdowns and only 10 interceptions, and then you said add on, he had about 8 rushing touchdowns. And I'm going to get into that before, because he really dominated the Bills rushing offense this year.
Yeah, for sure. It's funny with him, like, you look at analysts talking before the draft, they were like, oh, he's a boom or bust. Like, there was a lot of people just writing him off, because, I mean, when he was playing at Wyoming, he had flashes of brilliance, but other than that, like, he was a bit all over the shop. But I think Bills are really happy with what they've sort of got out of him so far.
Absolutely. And you see as well, speaking of Wyoming, they've gone out and they've added a few players, one of which is his old tight end, Jacob Hollister, from the Wyoming days. So he gets to build on that relationship again, while also, you know, having another year with Diggs, who was easily one of the best wide receivers in the league last year. And they've also added some in the running game, because I think Matt Breida. So I think what they're trying to do again is they're going to lift that running game. Because as I said, Allen was one of the centerpieces of the running game when you look at the stats. And that's probably not what you want to see in the NFL. You want to see your running backs doing the running for obvious reasons. But I think also if they get sort of a better running game running, that can open up more things for Allen, say the play action and things like that. So
yeah, 100%. I think they're pretty well-rounded offense at the moment. Like, they're, as you said, I thought, to me, Diggs was probably one of the biggest pickups and the best pickups of 2020. Like, he just went from strength to strength, and it just takes that team over the top with a really good wide receiver. And then Cole Beasley, just one of those underrated guys. He just gets in, gets it done. And then I think, what did they add? Emmanuel Sanders. Like, they lost John Brown, who's probably one of their best vertical threats. I don't think Emmanuel Sanders does that for him. That could be Gabriel Davis from UCF. They got the maybe 2 years ago. Yeah. But Emmanuel Sanders is a good pickup. Like, he's a solid guy that's been in the league for a long time, and I think he won't let them down.
No, I think Sanders looks like a good option. You know, I think they only signed him to a one-year deal, essentially. So he basically replaced, as you said, Brown. Some sort of say that he has potentially a bit more upside with Brown, but obviously he ends up going to that sort of wide receiver three spot. As you said, Beasley probably takes the slot, Diggs on the wide receiver one, and he'll probably rotate well with Davis, as you said. And I think Sanders can only sort of help with Davis and get him structured and get him out there. And even just looking down for those short drop-off routes and things like that, he's always good, been solid under that.
Yeah, absolutely. And they've got that Dawson Knox isn't too bad in the red zone at tight end. But as you were saying before, rushing was definitely their biggest weakness in 2020. Like, that Singletary is solid, and I think he's got room to grow. And they added Zach Moss, so there was kind of a 1-2 punch in the backfield. It wasn't the best. As you said, adding Breida could help. And I guess that one of them needs to step up to that true number one role, I think, taking the pressure off Allen and the expectation if he's always going to throw or if he runs, like, which he is good at running, but they need sort of that triple threat attack where they do have a good running game.
Yeah, that's correct. I think looking at that sort of running back by committee, they're obviously going to try and look at between Breida and Singletary. And both of them did have quite good years last year, both having yards per rush around the 4.5, 5 per carry, which is good numbers. But the issue that we've seen is they're lacking overall touchdowns. So Singletary's only had a career 4 touchdowns, and Breida's only had 6 in his whole career. So between the two of them, that's 10 over a career span. I think they've been in the league for at least a couple of years each. And looking at the Bills, they only scored 16 rushing touchdowns overall for the season. And as we said, Allen accounted for 8 of them. So, you know, they're not, you want your guys to be bashing the ball in and running over that line, really. That's where you're winning.
Yeah, he's really shouldering that load at the moment. And it's not really, like, other than throwing, they're not really getting up the field, sort of breaking teams, running out the clock, helping him like that. So be interesting to see where they go with rushing this year, but they've been very good receiving for a while. I think looking at the draft and what they kind of did in free agency, they were pretty far down the list because they went so well. I thought they were going to try and grab a corner because, I mean, they've got Tre'Davious White, who's probably a top 5 corner in the league. They ended up going with, what did they go? Edge rusher Gregory Rousseau, who kind of people thought dropped down the list, could have been higher. But I think it makes sense. Like, we saw the Bucs beat the Chiefs with edge rush and linebackers who just ran rampant over their O-line. So I think that's probably what they need to do to improve.
Well, that's what, as you said, this is going to be the AFC for the next, 4 to 5 years, the Bills versus the Chiefs. So they went to the draft literally how to beat the Chiefs. And the Bucs, as you said, showed us that in the Super Bowl. The blueprint is to rush Mahomes. Now, he still managed to get out of trouble a lot. And considering if his receivers had a quarter that could caught the, some of those balls, it may have been a completely different game. But you could just see just building that pressure and then working on scoreboard pressure and things like that makes it just that little bit harder for him because he is quite hard to shut down. So, yeah, as you said, they got Gregory Rousseau from Miami, who had 15.5 sacks last year and 19.5 tackles for losses. Oh, sorry, that was in the 2019 season. He opted out of 2020. But then they also used their second pick to get another edge rusher, Carlos Basham Jr., who was from Wake Forest, and he had 5 sacks and 4.5 tackle for losses last year. So they're great pass rushers, but the only considerations on both of them are that they're not so consistent on their defending the rush. So I think they're sort of, as you were building to beat that pass rush, but they're going to be a little bit weaker by the looks in that rushing defense.
Yeah, and I suppose there's some good rushing teams in the AFC with Titans and Ravens, so that's something they've got to kind of shore up. I think looking at the Bills in summation, for me, AFC Championship Super Bowl is kind of an expectation for me this year after last year. I don't see them regressing. I see them improving potentially. Lower than that, I don't think is the best outcome. I guess it's not that easy to get to the AFC Championship or the Super Bowl, but that's where I see them potentially at this year. What about you?
No, definitely. I think you've got to be wanting to make it to the AFC Championship with this sort of team. Obviously, it's going to be stacked at the top between, you know, them, Chiefs, Titans, and possibly Ravens as well. I don't want to give them too much hype, but I think at least those top three, it's going to be a little battle at the top.
Absolutely. All right, who have we got next?
Shotgun formation. Marino takes the snap. He's under pressure. Dodges the rush. Now throws deep downfield. Has a man open. It's caught. Irving Fryer, touchdown.
Goodness gracious.
We have the Dolphins. So for myself, I saw the Dolphins winning 7 of 10 next year.
Yeah, okay. I think I've got them going a little bit better. Their record I have is 9-8. But I think that's dependent on a lot of things. I mean, looking at their quarterback situation we mentioned earlier, between Tua and Fitzmagic, it kind of was difficult to get that role on. I think looking at the people they added this year, and I said barring any moves with Watson or Rodgers, I think they are sticking with Tua. They're going to run with Tua, and they think they could probably get the best out of him this year. What do you think?
Yeah, I think, look, Tua gets the shot to be QB number one. That's it. It's his role. It's his team now. Fitzpatrick's gone. Although they did add Jacoby Brissett this year. So there is sort of that risk with sort of, again, as I said, this high media profile with Tua. You know, everyone wants to be good now, otherwise he's a bust. It's that whole train of thought of this is boom or bust, this is boom or bust. But I think if we let Tua develop, he could actually become one of the better quarterbacks in the league. But I think, as I said, they've got Brissett there just in case. I've liked Brissett over the last couple of years. You know, he's been pushed back to back up a couple of times. Like, he worked behind Luck, and then when Luck got injured, he got his chance and dominated for the Colts. He actually played quite well, probably not dominated, sorry. But, and then when Rivers moved across to Indianapolis, he was shafted back to into the secondary.
Yeah, he's kind of always been that QB2, bit of a contingency plan for teams, hasn't he?
Correct. But I mean, look, you look at his 2019 numbers when he was starting, you know, he threw 2,900 yards with a 60.8 completion rate, and he threw 18 touchdowns for 6 INTs. So I think that's not the worst stats in the world, to be honest. Oh. Whereas you compare that to Tua's stats last year. Now, again, this is obviously with half the amount of games due to him jumping in and out, but he had 1,800 yards, 64.1% completion rate, 11 TDs and 5 interceptions.
Yeah. So I think it's Tua time this year, and we'll see how he goes. I think looking at their rushing attack, they're similar to the Bills. They don't have any real home run hitters, number one. Like, they've got Myles Gaskin, and I think they signed Malcolm Brown from the Rams. Yes, they're both solid with him, really amazing.
Yeah, I think that's it. And one thing that we probably didn't touch on with Tua, but is also going to influence the rushing game is their offensive line seems to be an area of concern. It's always sort of been a bit of a problem. So if you're not able to get that protection up front, how are you supposed to build those sort of things? But I think, yeah, as you said, Gaskin was the one that burdened majority of the load last year. He took 142 attempts for 580 yards, and they sort of had Ahmed to back him up with 75 attempts. But now with, you expect Malcolm Brown to sort of work with Gaskin in that number two role.
Yeah.
But I'm not so sure what their plan is for Tua as well, whether they're going to try and get him in like a Lamar type role and get him a bit running more, maybe in the Wildcat or something like that. Or are they going to focus on more protecting him? You know, as you said previously, he did have that old hip injury. He doesn't seem bothered by it now. That was about 2 or 3 years ago, I think, but it's still sort of always a concern when you've had such a major injury as such.
Oh, 100%. I think that's something that they'll always worry about. But I think when we're saying rushing or receiving, gee whiz, did they improve the wide receiver room in Miami this year to get targets for him to throw to? Well, I mean, looking at their list, they've got Devontae Parker, signed Will Fuller, drafted Jalen Waddle, who could be the best wide receiver in the class. We don't know. Even Preston Williams, he's pretty solid. And then you've got a tight end like Mike Gesicki, who's potentially a top five, if not future top five in the league. If he gets a zing into these boys, they will be tough to handle.
This is just one of the sexiest wide receiver calls I think I've ever seen. Like when I realized that Will Fuller had been traded, I almost dropped my pants. Like that guy is so good. I mean, and as you said, as they added Waddle and with the other guys that are already there, like this has been built to win. So they've given Tua all the tools. So, and I think that's why the pressure is going to be a little bit more on him, because it's like, hey, man, look, there is so much out there for you. Look at all these guys that are running for you. Surely you just have to pop the ball over the top and let your boys play. So I think that's probably what he's going to have to do, isn't it? He's just going to have to put it out in front of these guys and let them make plays.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's probably the biggest improvement for them. I think when we're looking at the draft for the Dolphins, they had the need at wide receiver. They filled the need at wide receiver. And then also using another first round pick, they grabbed Jalen Phillips, who strengthens the other side on the ball, the defense. Like he could be a very good player. He's a super athlete, got all the intangibles, just whether he can put it together on the field. I think also looking, they had a big, like Kyle Van Noy is a big loss. So I guess that's why they probably tried to fill that need. And at the same time, they grabbed Jason McCourty, I think it is, not Devin. I think it was Jason McCourty from the Pats, and they'll play him along Xavier Howard and Byron Jones at cornerback. So as an overall defense, they're pretty solid.
Yeah, no, they've done well. And I think I just enjoyed what they did on draft day with the capital and things like that. You know, they gained plenty from that 2019 year. And they used their sort of picks to get, they traded up to 12th and then got first rounders in the next two drafts, but then they traded themselves down again by not giving away too much as well to get Waddle at six. So I think that's why I sort of viewed them sort of in, it's definitely not a rebuild because they're built quite well, but they are building to something. And you can see that, you know, they'll challenge this year. I don't see them dethroning the Bills, but they've built so that 2022, 2023, they have so much capital that they're going to be able to add or trade or do what they want. So their championship window, I don't see it being now, but over those next 2 years, they're going to be able to wheel and deal wherever they need to and just add blokes or grab them from the draft and just strengthen that team.
Yeah, totally. I think that's, I agree with you there. For 2021, Tua has so much to prove. They've given him weapons. If he's firing, I think Dolphins could make a playoff push. I don't see it this year, but yeah, as you're saying, the window definitely is starting to crack open. Like if Tua is good enough, they can in the next few years with the draft picks they've sort of kept it in the war chest, could make a splash in the next few years and really come back to a dominance that they used to have in, what was it, the 80s, wasn't it?
That's it.
Play clock at 5. Pass is intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler. Unreal.
Absolutely. All right. Coming up next is, as you said, another episode, everyone's favorite team to hate is the New England Patriots. What do you see their record at in 2021?
I see them probably suffering a little bit as well, taking a few more losses than last year. So not too many though. What were they, 7-9 last year? So I have them going 6-11. So it's not too much of a difference, especially when you factor in that extra game this year.
Yeah, that's right. I've got them at 8-9, but I mean, the plus minus there, it could be much lower. It could be even be higher. It's like they're such a hard team to gauge, especially with people coming back in their situation. And Bill's, he's a very good coach. I know him. They always talk about, is it Brady or Bill? I think Brady kind of changed the narrative there, but we'll see how they go. Funny, interesting thing is the quarterback situation here. Grabbing Cam Newton last year was a bit weird for the Patriots. It's not their typical quarterback that they're used to, and he plays a different style. But then I guess they've gone ahead and drafted Mac Jones from Alabama with a first-round pick. So it's interesting to see what they go with. Bill always seems to have a plan, but I don't know what the plan is this year.
I think that's it, isn't it? You're talking about Mac seems to be that guy that he's gone in and drafted. He's a is a typical Bill Belichick type of QB. You know, they always talk about the QBs that they want to have the sound decision-making and protecting the football. So it was a bit interesting to see them go out and get Cam Newton. You know, he's really known for that running when the pocket breaks down and taking those sorts of risks. So you can see there was sort of that sort of style clash. Sometimes he really led into that and let Cam play footy, but a lot of the time I think it sort of broke down around them. And Bill seems to be one of those guys where you think when the pocket breaks down, you want a QB that's either going to sort of run through his progressions or just look to throw the ball away and get rid of it. Whereas, you know, Cam was sort of taking it on a lot. So, but as you said, Bill's quite a studier. We notice all the time that he's pretty good with film. So even though if they had sort of a bit of a style clash last year, I can only imagine that he's been meticulously planning a way to build an offense that he can use Cam with, as well as potentially sliding in Mac. I don't know if he uses Mac this year, though. It is hard to sort of say. If the chips are down, he'll probably get a run, but I think they protect him and get him ready for sort of future years and just keep using Cam, I suppose.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how that plays out. I think, as you said, if the season starts going downhill pretty quick, does he come in sooner? If not, does he come in later on down the track? They have a pretty decent rushing attack. They've always had the guys, like, not the absolute superstars, but they've had guys that just get through the work, grunt work. Like, they used to have LeGarrette Blount and a few others. And I think they've got a committee this year of Harris, White and Sony Michel. Like, all pretty solid guys, all capable of doing different things in different parts of the game. Like, James White's very good receiving as well as in the red zone. So that's not a bad rushing attack.
Yeah, correct. I think you always, as you said, you always talk about that like laborer type guy, not the big explosive Henrys, but Sony Michel he was always like that guy, especially when he came through at Seahawks. He was quite capable and very reliable, I suppose, as well. So you sort of see, as you sort of said, it'll be like a sort of backfield of committee type thing, but it'll be interesting to see if he tries to lean on Newton as well. So again, last year, Newton actually took probably the most rushing attempts more than Harris. So Harris had 100, oh no, actually, sorry, they took the same. They both had 137 attempts, but Harris only had 690 yards and Newton had 590, but Newton had 12 touchdowns. So
he was pretty good in that red zone.
Yeah, correct. So it is changing away from that style that Bill likes to have a QB that runs. So again, it'll be interesting to see if he wants to run more of that. And as I said, he sort of had the offseason to prepare, but they'll definitely probably try and take a lot of the burden off and using, as you said, Harris and Michelle.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking at their receiver room, this is just a typical New England Patriots receiver room. Doesn't look amazing on paper. Bill seems to get the best out of them, but they're not always seen as the top guys in the league. So I think, what have they got? Jacoby Myers. They grabbed Nelson Agholor from the Raiders. He's been a bit up and down in his career. I know he was pretty good at Eagles and then sort of went up and down, same as at the Raiders. They've got N'Keal Harry. I think it was their first round pick last year. And then they've added Kendrick Bourne as well. So again, it doesn't look huge on paper. But Bill's gone out and done Bill things again. They've grabbed Jonnu Smith and Hunter Henry. He loves his tight ends. And this just seems a very big Belichick move.
Yeah, look, it's huge. It's a great, I think it's, again, it's none of these elite guys, but it's these four or five players. When you put them out on paper, they look good, but putting them together, it's going to create a nice cohesive unit that is going to go out there and get the job done. As you said, Nelson Agholor is probably coming off one of his better years. He almost topped 900 yards. And it's going to be a big hole to fill, because obviously they're filling the spot of Julian Edelman, who retires, who I think you're looking at him, he's a potential Hall of Famer, essentially.
Big question mark on that, I suppose. Yeah, for sure. Like, he definitely could be. I know he's won titles and he's won in the, like, he's done a lot in the game. But as we said, like, it's a typical sort of list. Like, they've had Edelman, Chris Hogan in the past, who just, you wouldn't think of quality receivers, but just get that job done.
No, well, that's it. And then I remember I was looking at Edelman's numbers. Sorry, I'll just get him up. It was interesting to see sort of how much impact he actually had. And his numbers were not quite as large as you would think. I think, where did it go?
Because he just seems to make those big plays. I guess while you're bringing that up, he just made big plays in those big moments for Brady, like that catch against the Falcons, which was ridiculous. And then just some of those ones just down the middle, like just sort of picking up those yards that they needed late in the game.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, he only had about sort of 620 receptions over that career year. So wasn't, you know, picking up all the time. Won the three Super Bowls, but as you said, right place, right time. So he was the Super Bowl MVP in one of those years. I believe that was LIII. So off the top of my head, I can't remember which one that is, but I don't think it was the Falcons one.
No, I'm not really sure, to be honest. But yeah, look, I think that's a big question mark on the Patriots for this year. But we'll see. I think looking at their draft and their gains and losses for this year, picking up Mac Jones and another Alabama guy in Christian Barmore, pretty solid moves. They lost Joe Thuney from the O-line. That's a pretty decent loss. But they also, as we've talked about, they probably made the biggest splashes in the off-season, grabbing Matt Judon and then grabbing some of those tight ends and spending big just to improve that list.
And they also got, as you mentioned before, Kyle Van Noy. He moved across to the divisional rivals.
Yeah, he went back. That was his old team, wasn't it?
Yeah, correct. So I think they were easily the busiest team, and you could tell that this was one of those ones where they didn't like losing last year, and both the fan base and the staff. So they did everything they could out there to shore it up, even though there are question marks over sort of what the QB is going to look like.
Yeah, for sure. I think in 2021, I have Pats improving slightly, but how big of an improvement can they make? With Cam Newton, I think if they do, they move to Jones sooner if Cam's struggling, or do they kind of just stick out with Cam this year and see where they go?
For me, they'll probably try and stick with Cam to sort of use him as much as they can. With Mac Jones, you sort of see that he likes to have those project QBs, and he's done quite well with them. You know, with Brady, he notoriously turned him as a, well, God, he was one of the last draft picks, and he turned him into one of the greatest players of all time. Also, Jimmy G has been huge. And to a lesser extent, he also worked with Brissett and Jarrett Stidham. So he's been that guy that can create good QBs if he's had the time.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess 2021 is a huge question mark for the Patriots.
Jones fires, and it's intercepted by Revis. His first pick of the year. Revis still going. Darrell Revis down at the three.
We're rounded out now with everyone's favorite, the New York Jets. I have them with a record of a miserly 2-15. Again, those lower teams probably might get a few more. We don't know, but they're so hard to pick early in the season because they might jag a few wins, but I've got them winning 2 out of the 17 games.
Yeah, I must have given a bit more love because I've got 3 wins. So I just think the Jets will probably jag just one of those 1 or 2 wins. You know, Zach Wilson might just pick it up. He just may have just a field day on sometimes. And I think he gets the crowd going every now and again. And he just might pip it. But again, yeah. I don't see them winning many.
No, that's right. I think they went all in on Zach Wilson in the draft and just let's see what he can do. I have big doubts on whether he fits into sort of the whole New York system and scheme, but I guess he's got a point to prove and I'd love to be proved wrong. So we'll see how he goes. Rushing again. I think AFC East probably has one of the weakest rushing attacks in the whole of the AFC, if not the NFL. I think looking at their backfield, they've got LaMichael Perine and Tevin Coleman, and they drafted Michael Carter from North Carolina. I actually think they talked about him being pretty solid, so we'll see if he moves up the chart and gets a bit more carries than the other two.
Yeah, well, that's it. I think because they had Frank Gore last year. He's, again, going to be another Hall of Famer, but he's not on the roster anymore. So you add in Tevin Coleman, who came from San Fran, but probably made his best plays down at Atlanta. But again, he was sort of sitting. He wasn't really running back number one. He was sort of sitting, whether it was sort of from committee or he was sitting behind and being that guy would come in at sort of that, you know, third or fourth down type thing to just sort of push over those extra 2 yards. I mean, look, you look at Michael Carter as well from North Carolina. He had quite a good season last year. But again, are you going to pin all your hopes on a rookie from the fourth round? Probably not.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, look, it's hard to tell. Like, they're, again, rushing is probably going to be the downfall for them. Receiving last year was probably their biggest downfall. They had a very average receiving core. I think they kind of strengthened it this year. They're going out and grabbing a big guy from Tennessee, Corey Davis, which I think is a pretty good addition. Then you've still got that Denzel Mims, which is a round 2 receiver from 2020. Then they've gone out and grabbed Elijah Moore from Ole Miss in the draft, who kind of shot up boards. There was talk of him going in the first round. Sometimes they're big chat on him about him moving up the boards and being sort of a Tyreek Hill, sort of breaking the game open kind of guy.
Yeah, he's massive. And I think, as you said, receiving's sort of been their low point. I mean, you don't want to knock a guy, but when Jamison Crowder is sort of the centerpiece of your wide receiver core, that says something really, doesn't it? You know.
Yeah, absolutely. he can do good things and can have big games here and there. But yeah, adding that wide receiver one in Corey Davis kind of takes the pressure off Jamison Crowder, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And Corey Davis came off a huge year. He almost cracked 1,000 yards at the Titans and he popped another 5 touchdowns as well. So that's handy. You know, as you said, Elijah Moore had a great year last year in the SEC, which is, you know, that's not a bad conference as well. So you can go in there and you think does he even put up for Rookie of the Year? He's up there in the talks if, you know, he gets the ball from Wilson. I suppose that's going to be the biggest if, really.
Yeah, I think Wilson's the key with that, isn't it? Like, he can do all he can in running routes, but if Wilson's not getting it out to him, that makes it pretty hard. I think talking about the draft with Wilson, obviously he was probably the biggest thing they got there. And then they're throwing away pick number one. So they could have had Trevor Lawrence, but as we talked about, they kind of stuffed that up in the last year and they grabbed Elijah Vera Tucker to strengthen that O-line. Because I know they've got Mekhi Becton, who's a massive man, protecting on one edge. So I think they'll put Vera Tucker on the other and just sort of bookend those two.
Yeah, well, I think, as you said, we can clearly see that they've gone for the offense in the draft. So they've gone for the guard, they've gone for the wide receiver, they've gone for the QB. So they're sort of like almost not a huge spine, but it's just those pieces around to sort of protect the guy and give the guy someone to throw to. You also see they added Carl Lawson from the Bengals to the edge, just sort of that extra defender, really, just to sort of help stem the flow, I suppose.
Yeah, it's a solid addition. I don't mind that. As an overall summary for them, I don't see them making a big splash this year. I don't know if I'm that sold on Wilson, but as I said before, would love to be proved wrong. I hope he goes well, and I hope we see the Jets kind of bring it back to the glory days and get sort of back up there.
Well, I mean, it is interesting. They will have a new sort of system, as you said, new coach. They got Mike LaFleur running the offensive coordinator. He's famously the brother of Matt LaFleur, head coach of the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah.
So there is potential there for Wilson to learn under some good names, but again, it's going to be how he translates to the program. He didn't come from a very strong conference. He literally played two ranked teams last year. So you can't really say that he's, I suppose his record, yeah, it's hard to see where it will translate to the program.
Yeah, it's hard to read too much into it, I guess, is what you're trying to say there, isn't it?
Pretty much, yeah. And it feels like if they're getting down scores a lot, they're going to be throwing the ball a lot more than they run it because they're going to try and catch up.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think that sums up the AFC East for the
BYU gets lined up as fast as they can. Now 34, Wilson going deep. Wilson toward the end zone, and it is caught! Milne, touchdown!
This week, what we did is we kind of sent out a bit of a thing on Instagram asking for people's hot takes or predictions for the year. We got one from Feed Football. Thanks for writing in. So they've got Bills 13-3. I think you might 14-3. We'll say because there's 17 games. Dolphins 10-7. Pats 9-8. And Jets 3-14. Pretty similar to what you said. I think Dolphins might be a little bit different, but that's fairly similar to what you said. We got another one here from Too Loud, Sal and Ryan. Elijah Moore on the Jets is going to be a Rookie of the Year contender. I think you mentioned that before. If he can get the ball a fair bit and break open games, and I don't hate that take. That's pretty good.
Well, that's it as well. And we've sort of seen some of those rookie wide receivers just come in and just play ball. I know last year, Jerry Jeudy, Drew Locke, not the greatest QB out of Denver, but as soon as he got the ball, he just made plays. So it's well within the realm of possibility.
Yeah, absolutely. And the last one we got was from Sportsbet Casually, a tie will decide the division winner. Personally don't see that happening. It's a big take. It's
huge take.
Yeah, going out on a limb. But I don't think that happens. I think the Bills are far too dominant in this division for the next couple of years, potentially. But as we said, Dolphins could be a team on the rise. Patriots always can be there and about. Jets, we don't know, question mark. But yeah, no, not for me. What about you?
No, I think that sounds about right.
All right. Well, that brings us to the end of the episode. So look, going forward now with the podcast, we're going to be doing division takes every fortnight and then a regular episode on the in-between weeks. So what are we looking at next? We'll go to the NFC East for our next take in a fortnight's time.
Yep, the absolute chunder bucket of the league. Yeah, I hate them.
Yeah. No, there's some teams in there that we just don't like. And I think other than that, we just really appreciate everyone's support and following to the podcast. We're really enjoying it so far. And I think we've got a few things in the work that we probably won't talk about yet, but hopefully some bigger things in the future. But again, as always, Zach, thanks for having me, and I've appreciated the chat and keen for next week.
Let's get to it. See you next time.
Thanks for letting us in y'all crib. It's been real.